I'm Mark Bayshore. At the top of our program today, hundreds of thousands of Michiganders, young and old, contend with mental illness and developmental disabilities. For many of them, publicly funded community mental health services are key in getting the help they need. Now, language in Governor Snyder's 2017 budget would privatize the funding for those services by giving Medicaid HMOs control over the $2.4 billion budgeted for the state's public mental health system. After pushback from mental health advocates, the proposal seems unlikely to move forward, but it has triggered a discussion about how to improve the public mental health care system here in Michigan. Lieutenant Governor Brian Calley is now bringing together stakeholders to try and find consensus to move forward. Here to tell us more about the situation is Bob Sheehan. Bob's the CEO of the Michigan Association of Community Mental Health Boards. Welcome back to the program, Bob.
Thanks, Mark. Good to be here.
As I mentioned, there's been a lot of pushback, and it seems unlikely that the 2017 budget will include this language about Medicaid HMOs. But first, give us some context here. This was referred to as boilerplate language, I think by critics. Explain what this would do.
Sure. Well, let me give you some background. The boilerplate is the language that that goes with an appropriations bill, a budget bill, and it was Section 298. It would have moved all the Medicaid dollars from the public system, which had been in the system since the 80s, over to the private health plan system.
And it's now I've heard that measures with funding proposals as part of them cannot be undone. Is that part of the boilerplate here?
I'm glad you asked that. In this case, there are no real dollars attached to it. So that's actually a good thing. Sometimes dollars are attached to a boilerplate language, which makes it so it can't be taken
exactly.
out. This can be taken out. There are no dollars attached to it.
How does funding for community mental health services work right now?
Sure. It's mostly Medicaid. In most states in the country, in Medicaid is a federal-state partnership. It's mostly funded by Medicaid, which is the federal and state program for the poor and the disabled, as well as state dollars and local dollars, which fund about $3 billion in total. $2.4 billion of it is Medicaid.
And how exactly would the language in the Snyder budget change that?
It would have moved all the Medicaid money to the private health plans. Currently, all that $2.4 billion comes to the public mental health system through what are called prepaid inpatient health plans, public health plans. It would have moved it to the private health plan system, and those plans could determine from whom they bought services.
And what was the impetus for this change in the first place? What are supporters of this saying? Would there be cost savings, for example?
We actually think the impetus is positive. We just think the language was kind of clumsy. The impetus was to better coordinate care for persons, what we often call a whole person orientation, so that someone's mental health treatment and their physical health treatment are coordinated. That was the impetus. The language would not have done that. A phrase we often use is consolidation of funding doesn't integrate care on the ground. You want care integrated where the patient lives.
Well, some of what you're saying here connects pretty directly with a conversation I had just a short while ago. I managed to connect with a supporter of this approach, Rick Murdoch, a guy you know, heads the Michigan Association of Health Plans. You're working with MAHP trying to move forward on this. And I asked Rick Murdoch to explain briefly his support for the kind of approach that's in the governor's budget. Here's what he said.
I think everyone should be behind that, and that is, how can we best serve the whole person? In other words, how can we improve the coordination of care, become more efficient in the delivery of services so we can improve the end game for these beneficiaries? And I think what was lost in a lot of the discussion was that underlying point and the process to get to it.
Now, to what extent, where do you part ways with what Rick Murdoch said there?
I think Rick and I are on the same page 85%. And then his quote, in fact, is perfect. We agreed. That's what you want to do. You want to improve care at the patient level. Where he and I may not agree is who should touch the money first. His members are private health insurance companies, mm-hmm. and mine are the public mental health system. We have a strong belief the public system does the best job of protecting the most vulnerable citizens in our communities, and does the best job of making sure that people at highest risk are served.
Now, can you interpret what the governor and can you interpret the governor's budget as part of a broader move toward privatization then? Is this part of the privatization discussion?
You know, some fear that. There is an ideology, right, that is moving towards privatization in some parts of the state government. But I'm hoping to cast this separately. We're hoping to see this as a poorly written hunk of language that actually was meant to integrate care. And so we're trying to take the best approach to this, which is integration care, as Rick said, at the patient level. And that's what we're hoping for.
Bob Sheehan is the CEO of the Michigan Association of Community Mental Health Boards. We're talking about how a proposed change to the funding of community mental health services is sparking a conversation about how to improve those services here in Michigan. I take it there was notable reaction from the people who use these services in hearings held about this at the state capitol. Can you talk to us about that?
You know, I've been involved in human service delivery and politics for about almost 40 years. I've never seen such a strong sense of solidarity in numbers. The number of consumers, we call clients in our system, consumers and their families and advocates who spoke to the House and the Senate, to the governor's office, to the Department of Health and Human Service office, it was stunning, all with the same message. Take out Section 298 and keep the public system as the safety net for my loved one. Mark, it was just stunning to watch.
And it seems like lobbying from advocates and families did make a difference in the legislature. Describe where we stand right now.
Sure. Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly and the House leadership and Senate leadership have all agreed to take that language out. They've all committed to working on a system that could replace that language with a more collective, collaborative process. Brian Kelly, in fact, is chairing a committee of which my association and Rick's are members to determine how might we better redesign the system to improve care for clients on the ground where patients are served.
Now, about how many different organizations or constituencies are represented in this group?
It's been something to watch. So it started as just several dozen. It's going to be over 100 because people realize this is real, that I think people are taking Lieutenant Governor Kelly at his word, as I am, that this is a real effort. Let's redesign the system. So, and I think it's going to be a very good, well-orchestrated process, but it's going to be very democratic with a small D process where a lot of people are involved.
Do you think the earlier proponents of this approach truly believed that it was just a misguided approach here, or were they, for example, were they surprised by the response at the hearings at the Capitol? How did that unfold?
Boy, Mark, you know, that'd be hard for me to tell. People have asked me to conjecture about that. I'm not so good at conjecture. At this point, I think people, the core belief behind the language was let's get care integrated on the ground. And so we're taking that as the core goal. What the actual motives are beyond that, I can't say.
A little more context here. About how many people in the state are served in the community mental health systems?
A little over 300,000, and that's adults with mental illness, kids with what we call emotional disturbance, adults and children and adolescents with developmental disabilities, and persons with substance use disorders.
And how does that compare to the overall number of people who are struggling with mental illness? Is there a gap?
There is a gap. Nationwide figures as well as statewide show only about 20% of the people who need care get into care. There's lots of reasons. I mean, if you have commercial insurance, insurance is not as broad as people need it to be. There's also stigma. To admit you have a mental health condition isn't easy. So people who need it, in fact, will find out other means besides professional treatment.
A lot of the pushback here against the idea of this privatized approach centered around the idea that community mental health systems cannot be replaced with private providers. How do the services of community mental health systems differ from those approaches taken by private providers?
That's a great question. The Medicaid system and the state system in Michigan is one of the broadest in the country. It has a wide range of services, whereas traditional commercial, the private system, tends to use office-based psychotherapy, psychiatry, which is medication, and inpatient care. The public system can offer residential care, employment services, transportation, what's called case management, where I come alongside you and help you pay your bills, or help you make sense, help you get a job. We have school-based workers, we have drop-in centers, respite systems, transitional living, so a wide range of services that are not available in the private system.
Does the population that community mental health systems serve differ significantly from people who are going to private therapists or psychologists?
It really does. People in the public system in Michigan tend to have more severe conditions, more complex ones. They may have homelessness, employment issues. They almost all live in poverty.
What's behind that? Why are we in rougher shape?
We live in a world, though, where if you have a disability, it's harder to get a job. It's harder to have income that is sustainable. An income that allows you to live in the place where you want to live, pay rent that you want to pay, make sure you have nutrition and social opportunities.
But are you suggesting it's a bigger issue here in Michigan than it is in other states?
In every state that they see this, yeah.
So what are the changes here? And let's kind of open this thing up a little bit. What are the changes you would like to see for the state's community mental health services?
So we're always trying to improve. The system's been around since the 60s, and the improvements happen every day. The largest improvement we're trying to see is to integrate care where the patient lives. Let me give you some examples.
Sure.
By co-locating mental health practitioners in primary care practices. So if a patient comes to see their physician and the physician says, you know, I think there's a mental health need going on, they walk them down the hall. Vice versa as well. We're putting primary care providers in mental health settings. So because we found that folks who get mental health care often don't see a primary care provider, and they have many chronic health conditions. So there are 36 of those kind of efforts happening across the state where we've co-located folks or we're sharing medical records or coordinating care. We need more of those.
I'm reminded of Governor Snyder's State of the State address, I want to say in 2015, early 2015, I think it would have been, the River of Opportunity. Is what you're describing, Does that coincide with what the governor was aiming for here with this river of opportunity approach?
It does. His view was, let's not focus on programs, let's focus on people, and that's how you do it. You say, what does the consumer need, that the patient need? And from there, you build an array of services, including mental health and primary care and housing and employment.
Now, in 2013, I know Governor Snyder created the Mental Health and Wellness Commission, whose objective it was to strengthen mental health care services across the state. Do you think, has that been a success? Do you think there's been progress since the formation?
It has been. Yep. It laid quite a blueprint out, but it was a very broad one. This is a focused blueprint, taking sort of a page from that about integrated care and pursuing it more aggressively. So yeah, it set a good foundation for this effort.
So again, to where we are right now, how optimistic are you that the conversation that came out of this budget proposal maintains enough forward momentum to enact the kind of changes there seems to be a consensus for?
There is. I'm very positive for two reasons. It's very transparent now. All the consumers are watching. All the stakeholders are paying attention. They were woken up in the last month. And the lieutenant governor is serious about this. He wants to make this thing work. All the right people are at the table who can make the changes that are needed. Again, we're not taking a broken system and fixing it. We're taking one of the best systems in the country and improving it further. Mm.
And why does this need to be a priority?
People with mental health conditions die 25 years earlier than everybody else because they live in poverty, the impact of medications, and mental health has its own detriment. So our goal is to make sure that lifespan gap is closed by providing primary care.
You transitioned not long ago to this position at the Michigan Association of Community Mental Health Boards from a more local position, I guess you would say, the head of community mental health for Ingham, Eaton, and Clinton counties, as mm-hmm. I recall.
That's right.
What's the transition been like?
It's been good. It's been somewhat strange. We're used to running a CMH for almost 20 years, you know, to now be at a statewide shop. However, when you work in the capital area, you get involved in the statewide issues for my entire career. So it's been a smooth transition, and it's been great to work alongside my peers in this effort.
Always good conversing with you. Thanks for joining us today. Bob Sheehan is the CEO of the Michigan Association of Community Mental Health Boards. We're talking about how the 2017 state budget is creating a conversation about how to improve mental health services in the state. Thank you, Robert.
Thanks, Mark.